You could have a reasonable intention to stop a habit or to stop seeing someone or to stop something like that. And with, how is that different? Because by just telling yourself, like, oh, I want to stop this, you're kind of identifying with this, the thing that you want to stop. So you're kind of, as you say, with the family example, you're ensnaring yourself in the thing that you're thinking about. But then how do you could just go round and round and round thinking about it forever. Like, I want to stop. Does that make sense? Like, I want to.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
How do you know whether an intention is reasonable, or does that make sense?
Absolutely. The very first verse of the Mangala Sutta, Asevana Chabalanang Panditananca Sevana, not to associate with fools, but to associate with the wise, this is the highest blessing. That discrimination of what is wholesome, what is beneficial, what is harmful, what is obstructive, is an important discrimination to make. But everything hinges around intention. And the whole exercise of right effort kind of goes back to what I was saying about bhavatanna vibhavatanna. When we enter into meditation and also our relationships with, like, I want to be close to this person, I need to get this quality, I need to be more concentrated, I need to develop wisdom, I need to be more mindful, I've got to get more concentration. And so if that's based on, I am a person who hasn't got concentration and I have got to get it, I need more wisdom, I'm not mindful, I should be more mindful, all of that I, me and mine is then clouding, distorting the picture. The cultivation of right effort, samavayamo, is to restrain the unwholesome from arising, or if the unwholesome has arisen, to let go of it, to consciously cultivate the wholesome, and if the wholesome has arisen, to sustain it. So hearing that, you think, well, how's that different from, I want to get concentrated, I need to be more mindful, I want to get rid of my scattered thoughts. But when it's samavayamo, or the samapadana, the right efforts, the right strivings, there's no self, there's no conceit involved in that. The driving force for samavayama is mindfulness and wisdom. There's no I or me or mine involved. They look very like each other, like, to quote T.S. Eliot, one of his good examples, the stinging nettle and the dead nettle sit side by side in the hedgerow, but they're completely different plants. They look like each other. One will sting, the other doesn't. The stinging nettle and the dead nettle, they're different plants. They look like each other, but they're different. So what is right effort, skillful effort, samavayamo, can look like, I have to get rid of my defilements, I need to get rid of my chattering thoughts, I need to get more mindfulness, I need to be more concentrated, I need more wisdom, I should be. Like the stinging nettle and the dead nettle, sort of, they look like each other, but they're completely different. So with respect to skillfully, not to associate with fools, but to associate with the wise, recognizing situations, contacts, ways of speaking that lead to unwholesomeness, lead to conflict, lead to division, then there can be, based on mindfulness or wisdom, the choice to draw away, to not engage. If the mind is then instead creating a person, oh no, it's him again, I can't stand that bloke, how can I get out of here? Oh, my cousin's coming to visit, what can I do to get away? He's such a pain in the neck. Then the mind is creating self and other and concretizing that. So much hinges around attitude, and like turning the attention back onto the attitude and recognizing those bhavatanna vibhavatanna habits, getting to know what's the stinging nettle, what's the dead nettle, to recognize the characteristics of those and to let them go, and then to train the heart in letting the Dhamma practice be guided and energized by mindfulness and wisdom. I talk about this over and over and over and over because I feel it's such a marvelous focus of Lumpur Sumedho's teachings, and it's such an important aspect because we can put huge amount of sincerity and energy and dedication into the practice, but as long as it's based on, I am this way, I shouldn't be this way, I want to be that way, and how can I get to be that way, then the very framework for the practice is creating more causes for dukkha. 30 years ago, Lumpur was saying, if we set up the paradigm that I'm an unenlightened person who's got to do something now to become enlightened in the future, right there you created self-view. I am a person. Ding! Rather than, I'm an unenlightened person who's got to do something now to become enlightened in the future, he would just say, be awake now. or be wakefulness now. Not being a wakeful person, but embody that awake, aware quality now. And I fully confess, even though I heard Lumpur say that dozens and dozens of times over 30 years back, oh, that's what he meant. Oh my goodness, right. You know, you hear it, you understand it, but to really get a feel for how our relationships, our meditation practice can genuinely be guided by mindfulness and wisdom, that attunement of the jitta to the present experience, rather than creating a me here talking to a you there as fixed separate entities. Or me wanting to be with this family member or this co-worker and admiring this one and criticizing that one, or believing our reasonable criticisms of ourselves or our praises for ourselves, that it takes a lot of practice, a lot of time, a lot of effort to get to know the difference between the stinging nettle and the dead nettle. Yeah. When it's bhavatanna vibhavatanna, the desire to become, the desire to get rid of, and when it's sama vayama, right effort, wise effort. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's like that kind of 10,000 hours principle. There you go.
I suppose the only, another thing that kind of conceptual to me is like, you're the only arbiter of it is yourself, or your own experience, and so, or unless you meet Buddha, and the Buddha, but...
The Buddha might well let you make your own mistakes.
Yeah.
Many good teachers, their method is let the aspirant, like when Meghia said he wanted to go off and practice by himself, after three times the Buddha said, okay, off you go. He didn't say, this is what's going to happen if you go, and gave him a sort of display of his mind states. He didn't say, I forbid you, or kind of freeze him to the spot. He said, okay, I've made my input three times, off you go. See what you do with it. Any thoughts or comments on that area?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things is, as a part of training and ongoing reflection and contemplation, really trying to shift the attention from that self-assessment to the quality of experience in the sense of that wholesome, unwholesome, skillful, unskillful basis that the Buddha uses as a foundation for right effort, but as a paradigm for how we reflect on experience and seeing how that. And the Pali word is kusala and akusala, the wholesome, the unwholesome, skillful, unskillful. It's a really important basis for making decisions and guiding one's efforts and practice, because it brings one back to the fundamentals of the experience as opposed to a particular view of arising from a sense of self.
Decision-making isn't necessarily based on anything unskillful. So, for example, if you need to go to Hemel, if you drive down to the crossroads, the other side of Great Gadsden, you go right. You don't go left. If you want to go to Leighton Buzzard, you go left. It's not because you hate Leighton Buzzard or there's something wrong with it. It's just you don't need to go there. You need to go to the post office in Hemel. So you're making a decision. You're getting to the junction. You turn right. So there's a choice being made, but it's not personal. It's just, this needs to be carried out. I've got an errand to do at the post office. So get to the crossroads, go right. Avoiding those of foolish ways, associating with the wise, that can be related to in exactly the same way. If the choice is made to spend time with these people, the end result will be painful and messy. Let's not go to Leighton Buzzard. Let's go to Hemel instead, because if you spend time with these folks, then the result will be pleasant, comfortable, liberating, and beneficial. Okay, go right, don't go left. So it's not even making a kind of hard and fast value judgment. It's just, if you go there, that's the likely result. Sometimes spiritual teachings come across as if every kind of decision-making was an intrusion upon reality, or so disturbing the universe, or that it's some kind of distortion of truth to make a decision. But the whole of the Buddha's way, or even that it's a way, is based on choosing the skillful over the unskillful, not based on self-view, but using the cultivation of the wholesome to help generate an environment where the mind can most easily wake up and liberate itself. If it chooses the unwholesome, the unbeneficial, then it makes it that much harder, that much more difficult.